Are you tired of that one person that always stirs up drama on D&D nights? Click on the link in the show notes to learn about a workshop experience that might be for you.
Welcome to The Compendium, a resource designed to help you spend less time learning D&D and more time actually playing.
We are back for another episode of The Compendium, another episode talking about races, and this week we are going to dive into gnomes.
Gnomes, yes, everyone's favorite crazy uncle of D&D fantasy races.
Yeah, you know, I think this one's good because for some reason, my mind feels like gnomes and halflings share a lot of commonalities, and in some respects they do, but they also are very unique. And so I think it'll be fun to parse apart, like, what sets them apart from some of the other races, especially some of the other, like, curious races or some other things in this episode.
Yeah. So here's, like, where they meet with halflings. They're both small, both traditionally speaking and also mechanically speaking. They both have a love for life. And they are also both longer lived than, say, humans are. But where they differ, though, is that there's an exuberance to gnomes that halflings just don't have, right? Because we talked about how halflings are like home and hearth, a good meal and friends and family and community and that kind of stuff. Whereas gnomes have ADD, right? Like gnomes... Gnomes are like the Doc Brown of D&D, like just frantic, excitable, discovering new things, and just like there's this joie de vivre that's very excitable when it comes to gnomes. That's a lot different than you would see in the halflings, I think.
Right. And I think the crossover for me was that element with halflings that we talked about of like the curiosity. But with gnomes, it's like dialed up to 10, where it's right. Not just a curiosity. It's like an incessant, I must know more. I must experience this. This is amazing. Whereas halflings are like, oh, what? How curious. You know, they're like you said, they're more British. Like, oh, that's interesting. I'd like to know more.
Yeah, I would say that like the gnomes, if you have to put it to a country, is more like the Australians. Right. Where it's just like, yeah, Australians are crazy. But like, because Australians, like their whole continent's trying to kill them. Like literally everything. Literally everything is trying to kill them on that godforsaken piece of land. It's beautiful. Don't get me wrong. But like, I mean, but so they're a little like just like 3 degrees crazy, and it's beautiful. It's wonderful. But so what you get is this crazy thing where they live almost as long as elves, have the curiosity of the halflings dialed up to 11, the crafting ability in a certain vein of the dwarves, and the kind of drive of humans. So they're the most extreme elements of all of the races kind of force into one very compact package. So it's really, really interesting, actually.
Right. I'm really excited to dive into this conversation. So why don't we just start by let's talk about kind of their background, the history of gnomes, where you come from or what your lineage represents, or, you know, some of those different aspects that have brought you your character as a gnome to where they are in the world today.
Yeah. So generally speaking, gnomes are fairly common, much like halflings are. They're kind of going to make up a decent portion of any kind of like large city like Waterdeep or something. But like halflings, they're kind of the second tier, you know what I mean? Like you're going to find elves, dwarves, humans everywhere you go. And then more likely than not, halflings and gnomes. And gnomes are also, they usually have large families. And they live in either communities of their own or as part of larger communities in larger cities. And it's interesting, the Player's Handbook talks about like when a gnome is named, that they're given names by like literally everyone in the family. And some of them stick, some of them don't. But the names can come from like the mom, the dad, the clan elder, the aunts, the uncles, and the nicknames that everyone else uses. and they have to learn how to like pare it down when they're around other, as they say, quote unquote, stuffy races, and only use three names instead of the 17. Like, it's like my friends here in New Mexico who are you know, Hispanic or Latin, and they have like five middle names, right? Mm-hmm. But they just go by the first and last. And so it's very much like that. And so it seems like there's very close-knit communities as well, but not the hierarchy that you have from the dwarves, a bit more, you know, akin to how the halflings are. But everything that they do is really punctuated by this exuberance, by this kind of passion for life, that even though they live a really long time, they always have this feeling, or it looks like they have this feeling, that even that many centuries isn't going to be enough for them to do everything they want to do. And so they are pretty outgoing. They will invite people in, great hospitality. They're respected by other races. They treat other races well. There's not this like distrust that you might see in some of the other ones. So yeah, they're generally well accepted. I think the only thing that kind of holds them back is kind of the erraticness of it all. Like, do you remember that scene in The Neverending Story where Atreyu is going to the Sphinx and there's that crazy guy in like the pulley bucket thing?
Oh yeah.
Like, that's a gnome. Like, down to the bald head, crazy beard, and the excited talking, and he's got like a telescope he made and the pulley system he did, and like, that's a gnome, like really quintessentially when it comes to like D&D. And I think if people picture that or go back and watch that movie, you'll get a really good idea of that.
Right. And I just like the fact that they're all about like having a good time in life. Like, that, I feel like that is what they sum up to, is everything that they do is all about doing as much as they can to have a great time in life.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is. But it's not about like hedonism. It's about learning new things, trying new things, inventing new things, especially because they're kind of known as the clockwork inventors of most D&D worlds. And so little clockwork inventions and clocks, bombs, steampunk stuff, that's very much them. Before the artificer class was introduced, the gnomes were the ones who would kind of be responsible for all that kind of stuff.
Right. I think it's interesting. I mean, that makes sense. Like, when you're going into how they live, like, it even says that their houses are kind of like very cleverly constructed. They're usually a little bit camouflaged, but that's very interesting with the whole, they want to experience everything. Mm-hmm. Because you know, I would think like they'd kind of be up on the hilltop with the neon signs that say, come visit us and tell us all of your stories because we want to know it all. But they're kind of like this mix of like, we're kind of tiny, you know, there's dangerous stuff out there, but I still want to know about the dangerous stuff. So,
right. Yeah, exactly. And so like they have some natural, you know, magical ability, unlike the halflings. So they will use illusions and, you know, kind of camouflage or like, you know, secret doors to hide their dwelling places, but they're not uber secretive typically and kind of hiding out by themselves like some of the halflings can be. So they'll still be part of larger societies, but that kind of obscurity and camouflage is more localized to their particular house or domicile.
Do gnomes tend to live, do they tend to live in communities of other gnomes, or is it usually like a family that lives somewhere, or are they in like, you know, I don't want to say like gnome cities, but they're clusters of gnome families that are all kind of tend to band together?
Yeah, that's not as well defined, but okay. It does seem that they would have entire like towns or villages of gnomes, you know, grand cities, perhaps not, although that would be phenomenal. You could see them either way. You could see them in their own settlements or as part of a larger like human culture or integrated culture like at Waterdeep or Neverwinter or something like that.
Makes sense. Yeah, and I also like in here how like it kind of, in the Player's Handbook, how it kind of references that other races recognize the value that gnomes bring to the table with their exuberance, their curiosity. One of the things it mentions in here specifically is that humans tend to retain a gnome for several generations of like tutoring.
Yes, which is
because
awesome.
Because not only do they have a lot of information, but they're just a lot of fun to be around and very excited about life. Yeah. And so it's kind of cool. I like the thread that I'm pulling out of there. Like, other races really recognize this really special something about gnomes that maybe doesn't exist in any other race, which is why they really want to, like, you know, work with them or, you know, kind of be a part of what they have to offer. It's like that one really good friend that you have that always makes you laugh and tells jokes and, like, is the light of the party. It's like, yes. You always kind of want to be around them because you just feel like you're in a good mood whenever they're around.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing too. Like, and that hits part of like your earlier question is like, yeah, they're not going to be like their own, like, kind of sequestered, you know, villages or settlements like the halflings might, because they want to know everything and they're excited and like being around people. And there's that energy. You can't hide that off in a corner somewhere. It's not going to work. But also at the same time, gnomes almost require a level of sophistication to see their value, right? Like, because they're intelligent and they make great teachers and inventors and things, they work well with a, you know, a moderately advanced society that has culture and schools and libraries and places where you can go and learn magic and that kind of stuff. Because of the core races we've talked about so far, they don't offer a immediate value on a very, very base level, like, right? Like, humans, they're ambitious. Great. Elves are, you know, they're great with bows and they have magic. Dwarves are hardy and strong and make great weapons. Halflings are sneaky and quiet. Like, you all can see, like, in a very, like, you know, Conan the Barbarian kind of way, where things aren't sophisticated or to a level of complication. Like, what do you do with a gnome? They can't fight. They can't sneak. They can't do magic the way you want them to do. But as soon as you start having civilization, they're incredibly advantageous. And so it makes a lot of sense. That's why they aren't more, I don't know, of a prodigious and dominating race in most fantasy settings, because they kind of really shine once you get to that middling to high tier of a fantasy culture.
Mm-hmm. So what are you, we've mentioned a couple already, but let's maybe list a couple of, I don't want to say personality traits, but behaviors or ways that gnomes might talk, if you're really wanting to get into the role-playing aspect of diving into a gnome, because I feel like there's so much there to work with this race in particular. You know, we talked about they're basically going to talk as fast as they can because their mouth can't keep up with their thoughts. I know they like to make jokes, like play pranks, because again, it's all about let's have a great time, let's experience, let's have fun. What are some of the other, like, if you're wanting to really dive into the role play, what are some, if again, stereotypical maybe, and you could do what you wanted, but what are some springboard points for gnomish type behaviors? Yeah.
So when they do speak, they are energetic and talk very, very quickly, probably using their hands a lot, but they still have the ability to listen to other people because they want to learn things. And so if you want like some cultural touchstone points of like, in like movies, films, and TV, books, that kind of thing, to kind of go, oh, they're kind of like this. A few great ones would be Doc Brown from the Back to the Future series. Mm-hmm. I think, like we said before, in Neverending Story, just outside the Sphinx, there's that man and wife that live there. I think in Princess Bride, Miracle Max is pretty good.
Yeah.
He looks like one. He's just too tall for it. But if he was a tinkerer, like, that's perfect. Also, I really love in the TV show Alias with Jennifer Gardner, there is their like gadget guy. His name is Marshall.
Oh, yeah, Marshall.
Marshall is perfect for this. He even talks quick, gets off subject, realizes that it's not playing in the room, and then gets back to the thing. But what he makes is amazing. And he's just a really friendly, nice guy with not a bit of malice or deceit in him. And so Marshall is a great touchstone point as well, I think, personality wise.
And all of these traits really culminate very nicely to the call of adventure.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Like, you can just pick your poison when you're trying to decide how your little gnome character decided to go off on adventures, because, oh my gosh, it could have been they saw a shiny thing in the road and wanted to know where it came from. Or, like, I mean, you could just pick anything almost out of that state of just excitement and curiosity.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and they're risk takers, right? Like, at their core, that's where that kind of human element comes in. unlike some of the other races we've talked about, they'll take risks, and sometimes very foolhardy risks, to kind of accomplish their sometimes inscrutable goals. But yeah, like, they're the ultimate risk takers. They'll jump down the hole first. They'll go with you into the, you know, the cavern of doom in the hopes of finding this one thing they're looking for, no problem. So yeah, I think risk and knowledge and joy and excitement are really kind of the key words to keep in mind when role-playing a gnome.
We hope you guys enjoyed this episode of The Compendium. If you haven't already done so, it would really help us out if you took a moment to subscribe to this podcast and leave us a review. Jason and I really enjoy creating this content, and it definitely helps boost our charisma modifier every time we see a 5-star rating pop up. The Compendium is actually also on Patreon, so if you like listening, that is a great way to help contribute to the content that we create. New episodes are available every Tuesday and Friday, or Monday and Thursday if you're a patron on our Patreon account. And you can always keep up with us between episodes by following us on social media. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you guys next time.